Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
And welcome to Revitalize and Replant without Dan Hurst. I know you heard him on the intro, but Dan's not with us today. He's out making a truckload of money doing voiceovers. So anyway, but I'm here with Mark Halleck.
Hey.
In Denver.
We are.
In his studio with Kyle Bierman. And thank you for being with us today. Today we're going to talk about something that Mark and I know a whole lot about. That is obstacles to church growth.
That's an understatement.
That's right. Our friend Chuck Lawless, who is such a blessing to the church, he has given us 10 obstacles to church growth. Now, we may get through all 10 of these in 20 minutes, or we may drag it out and get two episodes out of this thing. We may make it a mini-series.
And you never know.
You never know. But clearly, with so many churches in decline and barely hanging on and struggling, we want to talk about what is it that's really causing you to have those obstacles. Mm-hmm. What is it that's holding you back?
Yeah.
What is it that's making the situation much more difficult? And can we identify them? Because if we can identify them, we can work toward rectifying them.
Yeah.
So what's weighing you down? Number one, Mark.
Good. Number one that Chuck lays out is a worn out pastor. A worn out pastor is a major obstacle to church growth, and that is true.
And how many pastors do we know who are just exhausted?
Yeah.
And of course, coming through COVID, we've talked about this before, but coming through COVID and then coming through the incredibly challenging political seasons that we've had and all the other things going on, that it's just wearing pastors down.
Yep.
And we talked in an earlier podcast about the fact that, you know, average attendance has dropped across North America at the beginning of the 21st century in the year 2000. Average worship attendance was about 160. Mm-hmm. And today, or 137 rather, and today it's 65. So it's about half.
Yeah.
So in 20 years, average worship attendance has dropped to about half. Clearly, all kinds of conflict, both in the church and outside the church, is up. Financial pressures are up. Family pressures are up. And pastors are exhausted and worn out.
Yeah.
Man, it is tough to have an outward growth evangelistic mindset when sometimes it's all you can do to just do one sermon a week and deal with all the church problems that you have.
Real quick, let's give an encouraging word. What would you say to that worn out pastor who hears that and says, yep, that's me. That's me. What do I do? What do I do about that? Now, there's not a magic bullet, of course.
You get some rest. All right? I'm seriously, take care of yourself.
And don't feel bad about it.
Get some rest and realize you don't have to carry the weight of the church on your shoulders. It's Jesus' church and he'll carry it. He just asks you to do what you can do and be faithful with what you can do and not try to do those things you cannot do. Mm-hmm. And if you'll be faithful with what you can do, then he'll do what he can do. Find your joy and your rest in Jesus, not in the results of your work.
Yes.
And how many people show up. How many people say good things about you, but find it in Jesus. Find your joy in your family, and find your joy in things that Christ brings to your life. Find hobbies to keep you engaged and things to help clear your mind. And don't just worry about the church 24/7. First of all, the Lord has a lot to say about worry and how helpful that can be, right? Not at all.
Right.
And how damaging it can be. So if you find yourself in a cycle of worry about the church, that's not coming from Jesus.
That's right.
So, and just know you're not in this alone. And have a long view, not a short view, you know, and only eternity is going to really determine the results of your labor. And I think it's just a cue when you're worn out and exhausted, it's just a cue to go back to the cross, find your joy in Jesus.
That's right.
Find your rest in him.
Yep.
Listen to him when he says, come unto me, all ye labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest.
Yeah.
Your rest is not found in your church growing. Mm. Your rest is not found in your church not having conflict. Your rest is only found in Jesus. Whether you have conflict in your church or whether your church is declining, you can still find your rest in Jesus.
That's so good. Okay, number two, an inward focus. Inward focus is a second obstacle to
church growth. We've talked about this so many times. When churches are planted, they're always outwardly focused, right? Everything is about how do we reach people? How do we develop leaders? How do we start new ministries? And then somewhere along the line, as you reach people and start ministries, it all becomes about how do we maintain the people we have, not lose the people we have, maintain the ministry we have. We end up buying a building or building the building, and how do we keep the building going? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of expense in keeping that going. And before you know it, there's very little outward focus. It just, you don't drift toward outward focus. You drift toward inward focus. People drift toward taking care of me and my family.
That's right.
And if you're not intentional about outward focus, you will not have it. And if you don't have it, you will stop growing. And it can't be a once a year thing. It has to be your church's DNA. That we wake up every day and say, how can we increase our ministry footprint? How many people can we connect with this month and let them know we love them and Jesus loves
them?
Not, you know, how can we make sure nobody in our church is unhappy and everybody gets everything they want and we don't want anybody feeling left out. No, we want people to be engaged in reaching their community.
And you know, a real simple way I would say to begin helping your people with this is, and this may sound weird to some people at first, it shouldn't be, is get a group of folks and just walk around your neighborhood and maybe stop periodically just to pray. I think a lot of folks, they hear in that sanctuary regularly, we need to reach the community, reach the community. But they're never physically in the community.
That's right.
So just get together, literally, put on your walking shoes. Let's walk through the neighborhood. He goes, go for a walk. We need a little more exercise anyway, right? So let's go for a walk. Let's stop. Let's see the schools. Let's see the people. Let's just pause. Let them see it and pray and see what the Lord does. So anyway, that's number two, an inward focus. Here's number three. Bad preaching.
Well, we're going to do some podcasts coming up on how to improve your preaching. We've done some, and some I've been watching you guys online, and some of you aren't listening to us. So we're just going to have to keep doing these until you pay attention. This is what Dr. Lawless says. Sometimes it's not as biblically sound as it should be. At other times, it's less than exciting. Either way, it doesn't lead to growth. Our, you know, Martin Lloyd-Jones says preaching is logic on fire. And guys, you got to have both. I mean, you've got to have solid doctrine, but you've got to preach with a sense of hope and joy and that you're glad to be there.
Do you actually believe what you're saying?
Yes. You do not have to be this great poetic person with a deep resounding voice like an Adrian Rogers or something. You don't have to have that. But Mark, talk to us about what a person needs to see in their pastor when he's in the pulpit.
I mean, first of all, I would say this. You've got to be loving your people outside the pulpit, for one thing, okay?
Okay.
Because part of what brings credibility to your preaching is who you are outside of the pulpit. When you're in the pulpit, a couple things. Guys, work hard on your sermon. Work hard on your sermon. You can tell when a guy has just gone up there and given about, you know, a little bit of prep and just kind of shooting from the hip. Your people can also tell when you have been in your study and you have wrestled with this text and you've worked hard on your sermon and you've chosen words that are intentional. So I want to encourage you to work hard on your sermon. I want you to, my encouragement would be to work hard to preach the text. Be text driven. You don't have to be some cool, clever guy who's coming up with a bunch of funny stories. In fact, don't do that.
No.
You'll just risk being a cheese ball up there. Like, you don't want to do that. You want to preach the text faithfully, but you also want to preach it, as Mark said, with joy and passion. Do you believe this? Why does this matter? Why is Jesus better than anything in your life? And if they don't think you believe that, why in the world should they believe it? So I'm starting to preach right now, Clifton, but this is so important, guys.
And look, we don't have time in this podcast to unpack everything about bad preaching, but here's the deal, guys. Listen to your preaching and ask other pastors you trust to listen to your preaching, and even ask people in your church to give you really good feedback on your preaching and be willing to hear the criticism. I hear all the time, guys, somebody come up, a deacon or a leader will say, we've got some issues with your preaching. And guys get real defensive, like you just told them their baby was ugly or something, right? Listen to what they have to say. We'll do a whole other podcast on it. But there's no doubt that sometimes an obstacle to growth is not only a worn out pastor and inward focus, but also, frankly, bad preaching. Thirdly, or fourthly, rather, evangelistic apathy. We've talked about this, but we just get used to nobody coming to know Jesus.
Right, right.
We actually store stuff in the baptistry. We don't even use the baptistry anymore. It's like we just, it's just who we are, you know?
What do you think, Clifton? You're an old man.
I am an old man.
You're a good-looking old man.
I'm getting older all the time.
I'm just curious, SBC evangelistic culture in the 60s, 70s, you know, 80s even, when we were seeing a lot more growth in
we
this.
We always had something going on.
Like, what was unique?
We always had something going on. We always thought that Vacation Bible School, we were going to reach kids for Jesus in Vacation Bible School. That was, and we always had a spring revival and a fall revival. And it wasn't that we had revival. You can't plan a revival.
Sure.
I get that. But you know, like in the churches I grew up in, we would have 2 weeks of what we used to call cottage prayer meetings, which sounds kind of weird. It was home prayer meetings for the evangelistic services that were upcoming. So we had a couple of weeks of prayer, and then people were very, very intentional about inviting their lost friends to come to these evangelistic services, and we actually saw people come to know Jesus in that. Also, later on, as sort of maybe revivals began to wane a little bit because of people's schedules and other things like that, you know, we were really emphasizing all kinds of evangelism tools. You know, some of them were pretty lengthy, like, you know, EE, Evangelism Explosion, or Continued Witness Training, or even just the Four Spiritual Laws. Yeah. But we were always equipping our people.
Yes.
And in the equipping, there was an expectation.
Right.
Even in the 80s, when I was first a youth minister, associate pastor, at church every Thursday night, we would show up every Thursday night. It wouldn't be a lot, but there'd be, you know, it was a church of a couple hundred people. There'd be 15, 20 people every Thursday night who would show up, trained in evangelism, had a list of prospects we found from somewhere, and we would just cold call people in their home and share Jesus with
them. Wow.
We don't do that anymore.
No,
and people could push back and say, oh, well, people don't want to hear it. They don't want you to come to their door, yada, yada, yada. Okay, but what are you doing instead of that? What are we replacing that with?
Yeah.
We haven't replaced it with probably anything.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, our evangelism efforts, because we say, well, revivals don't work, and you can't just cold call on people, and then, you know, you can't do the EE like you used to, and we don't have bus ministry anymore, and, you know, so what? But what are you replacing it
with? I agree, man. And I would say for my generation, we got to take some more risks for Jesus, man.
That's right.
I mean, I hear you saying that, and I'm like, man, yeah, you can criticize some of those things all day long, but what are we doing?
Exactly.
Man? And guess what? People are still going to hell.
That's right.
They need Jesus.
That's
what
right.
are we doing?
That's
so
right.
That's huge. Here's number five. There's just no growth strategy.
No, you just do the same thing year in and year out, and the programs you have are because your people like them, not necessarily because they work or they reach people or they make disciples, but your people like the programs you have. They're very committed to the programs you have. You have the church picnic. You have the annual this. You have the annual that. You have these meetings and these things, and you're just going through the motions of having the same calendar every year. There's no strategy that says this is how we're going to reach people. You know, a lot of times in these newer churches, you have a huge strategy. But I was talking to a guy the other day in Kansas City, or he said our church has a strategy of planting a church in every suburb, every community in Kansas City. We're going to plant a new church in every, and there's like 56, 57 communities in Kansas City. And they're on their way to doing that. That's a strategy.
That's a strategy.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is not a big church.
Yeah.
But they've got this passion. It's a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
A church I was aware of in a town in Kansas who said, you know what? Our strategy is we're going to reach 5% of the population of our county. Right. And when I was at Warnell, you know, our first strategy was we're going to share the gospel or present some sort of a Bible or hang a New Testament on a door or something to everybody who lives within a mile of our church. They're going to know who we are. So tell me about your strategy.
Well, no, and I love what you're saying. It's like, what's the plan?
Yes.
Where are we going? How
yes.
are we going to get from point A to point D? And so, with us, I mean, this is where a pipeline of leadership development is so huge. How are you equipping your lay people to live on mission? Do you have a vision for multiplication, either planting new churches or helping a dying church? What are you doing to help prepare folks to be sent out to go there? You've got to have a vision. You've got to have a plan, and it takes faith, and it takes a lot of prayer, and it takes strategy. It takes thoughtfulness. And I would say this, man, if you're like, I'm just not a very strategic leader, that's okay. Guess what? You've got brothers around you. You've
got
other
right.
pastors who are really gifted in this.
That's right.
Man, call them up, man.
That's
can you
right.
help me think through what it would look like to develop an intentional growth strategy for our church over the next 5 years.
And we say all the time, if you don't have a growth strategy, go hang out with some church planters, all right? Because mm-hmm. that's the world they live in.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, sometimes those of us in declining churches, we don't hang out with any pastors because we don't feel good about what we're doing. Or if we do, we hang out with guys like us and we sit around and commiserate on how nobody comes to church anymore. We don't have any leaders and our churches are dying. That is not helpful.
No.
I mean, go find a group of, and they're usually going to be young, not always, but find a group of young church planters and say, look, man, can I hang out with you? Can you go to lunch with me? Can you tell... They would love doing that.
Yes.
And so you're going to have to start having some intentional strategy. And it can be really small to begin with.
Yeah.
You don't have to be huge, but just do something.
Exactly.
And to try to connect to
people. That's exactly right. Okay, we're going to bust through. We're going to bust through the last five.
Okay, go quick. Here we go.
Okay, so number six, turf wars.
Yes. People who come in from the outside are not interested in the fact that your people are fussing over programs and agendas and calendar and budget and do we need a new copier or can we keep the copper we got and should we fix the ice machine? Do we even need an ice machine or all this junk
that bogs
the church down?
Yep.
That just sucks energy and life out of a church.
Amen.
You know, when the Apostle Paul was talking to Timothy in 1 Timothy, he said, you've got to stay there so that people don't get all messed up in endless myths and genealogies that end up in nowhere.
Yes.
Now, we don't know what that was, but it wasn't doctrine. Right. Because if it was doctrine, Paul would have told them how to straighten it out. They were talking about stuff that didn't matter, but they were still fighting over it.
Mm.
That's a death wheeze of a church.
Totally, man. Totally.
New people. And now listen, not only will new people not come to that, but check this out.
Yep.
Jesus says, I will build my church. Mm. Jesus brings people to your church. Yep. He's not going to bring people to your church if your church is a church that fusses with one another.
No.
Because he's not going to want them there.
No.
So you got to deal with that.
That's exactly right.
All right.
That's
next one.
That's good. Number seven is prayerlessness. Prayerlessness. And here's what Chuck says. He says, I know this one sounds like a super spiritual reason, but I'm not shocked by the correlation between churches that don't pray much and churches that don't grow much.
And what I said earlier about back in the 60s and 70s, we never had revivals if we didn't have 2 weeks of cottage prayer meetings.
Hey, real quick, I got to just ask you.
Yeah.
What is a cottage? I'm super intrigued.
It was a house.
So like folks from the church would come together.
In somebody's house.
And like spend an hour or two praying.
And praying for the revival.
Cottage.
Yeah. I mean, they used to, I don't know why they called them cottage prayer meetings.
Dude, that's so cool. I want to bring it back.
Because you do it, you get a cottage. I remember I was a kid, my dad said, well, we got a week of cottage prayer meetings. And I thought, what is that? And then I realized, you know, it means a house. So you meet in the home.
I love that.
And we would meet, usually we would meet in deacons' homes, and each deacon would invite several families to their house, and they would spend an hour or so every night that week just praying for revival. Or they'd, you know, two nights a week or whatever. Or sometimes they'd do it for a month ahead of time and meet every Thursday night. It would vary, but pray for themselves, pray for revival. Back in those days, I mean, you wouldn't think of having a revival if you didn't have a week or two of prayer. And now people have a weekend revival and somebody come in on some preach, you know, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday morning, not have any real prayer services before or after. And
we wonder why there's no fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, we got to bring the cottage prayer meetings back.
I would agree.
Make them great again. Here we go. Number eight, space issues.
Well, our friend Chuck says here. The reason that this is the least positive one, the congregation has outgrown its parking or its facility. The crowd won't come where the crowd won't fit. Now, that's not the problem most of the churches that we deal with.
Yeah.
But he is right, particularly about parking, okay? Because what happens is if your parking lot is packed and there's nowhere for new people to park, they will oftentimes just drive on. That is absolutely true. And so you've got to make sure, even if you don't have a full parking lot, you've got to make sure that there are empty spaces with well-marked signs. You know, when I was at Warnell, we were around 30. Okay.
We
didn't have anybody. Okay. And we had 70 or 80 parking spaces. Okay. Our last problem was going to be parking, right? But I want to act like I expect new people to be there, right?
Yeah, sure. Totally.
So I went to this sign company and I had these big signs made up, about six of them, that said, first time guest parking. And I put them right up by the front of the building. So it looked like, well, they must have a lot of guests there. So if a new person pulls in, they'll feel like, well, I'm just going to be one of six today. Yeah. I just the expectation.
I love that. That's awesome.
All right.
Okay, number nine is poor discipleship.
Or how about no discipleship?
Okay. Yeah, that's probably more accurate.
We have confused for decades disseminating information with discipleship. And I think it was Barnabas Piper when he was talking about growing up as a kid, a preacher's kid. He said, I had a whole pantry full of food, but I didn't know how to make a meal. And I think we've got Christians in our church just like that. They got a whole pantry full of food. They have all this biblical knowledge, but they don't know how to live it out daily in their life that results in them being evangelistic and Christ-like and becoming more loving and caring and generous. And they just, it just kind of stays where it is. It stays in the pantry. And we just keep putting food in the pantry and never teach them how to cook. And again, we don't have a disciple. We don't have a giving problem or an attending problem or evangelism problem. We have a discipleship problem.
Okay.
And I got to hurry. Please. We don't give on ramps for discipleship.
Right.
We could do a whole program on that. But you do here. And that's talk to us here about how you do it here.
Well, you got to have a process. It's got to be clear. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, so for us, we would say, I mean, there's different ways that we do this, but obviously your corporate worship gathering, that's part of discipleship. That's important.
It is.
But beyond that, what else do people need? We would say, there's a lot of power we see in the New Testament of life on life discipleship. And so we have what we just call D groups or discipleship groups with two to four women or 2 to 4 men. Those could be intergenerational also. We've talked about that in the past. But man, there is something powerful about getting together with a small group of men or small group of women in the Word, praying for each other, helping one another grow. Those who are older and more wise in their faith with those who are newer believers. That's a big thing, is what are you doing with new believers in the church? Beyond just, man, they confess their faith, we baptize them, and now come to church. Man, we've got to have a figure out how are we going to grow them. And then beyond just that basic discipleship, we would say the goal is for them to be a disciple maker.
Absolutely.
Okay? So you're discipled, but ultimately to the end of, you are discipling others.
And I guess it's incumbent on you, Pastor, to communicate regularly in every way you can why this is important and how you become part of a disciple group. And you make up the disciple groups and you encourage people to go to them. And they're not going to naturally want to do that, all right? They're not going to come to you and go, oh, I want to be in a disciple group. You're going to have to go to them as the shepherd and you're going to have to convince them and lean into them. This is going to be best for you. And you will tell me, I know, that when they engage in these D groups, they grow and they love them and they're grad.
Totally.
But they didn't necessarily want to do it to begin
with. You've got to create a culture of discipleship. So real quick review. Okay, you ready for this?
Here we go. Number one,
these are all obstacles to church growth. A worn out pastor. Inward focus. Bad preaching. Evangelistic apathy. No growth strategy.
There you go.
Turf wars. Prayerlessness. Space issues. Poor or no discipleship. And then finally, number 10 is a retreat mentality.
In other words, we're here to get away from the world. We hate the world. The world hates us. It's going to hell. And we don't really, you know, it's like...
Circle the wagons.
It's like when James and John, when Jesus was rejected and James and John said, hey, how would you like us to call down fire from heaven and burn these people up, right? Well, they were referring to an Old Testament example. But when you and I say, man, I just wish Jesus would come back and take us home and destroy this world, we're saying the same thing, okay? And it means we don't love this world the way Jesus loves the world. We're not broken for this world, right? And if the church becomes a place where we cloister away from the world rather than, we are to be in the world, but not of it.
The world. That's right.
And so a church that becomes this bastion against the world is not going to happen. Some of you said, oh my goodness, all of those are me. Well, then we're here to help you, all right? You're not alone. The adversary is at war with the church, and he wants to drag your church down. And so we're going to post these at the show notes. You can go to them and read Chuck's article, and you can find more help for your church at churchreplanters.com and subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends, and we'd love to hear more from you. Have a great day.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.